You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the co-host of this wonderful show, and join me on the other line, because it is another weekly show, another week, and not great week, let's say, for the Pacers, Mr. Tony. Tony, do we even want to talk about the Raptors game?
We kind of have to. I have never seen
46-point loss.
81 points, I believe, is their lowest of the season. Their lowest before is 85, right, against the Bucks.
Maybe.
Yeah, that was horrible. Adam, here's your fun fact stat from this basketball game, because you know you have to have a fun fact stat when you lose this badly. The Pacers shot 14 for 36. That is 39% at the rim. At the rim, they shot under 40%. They shot better from 4 to 14 feet than from 0 to 4 feet. They sucked. They could not generate good layups. They missed a bunch of threes. Their defense was terrible in transition. They flat out sucked.
Yeah, the starters combined for what? So you got a 6 of 16, 3 of 12, 3 of 10, 4 of 15, 5 of 12. That's not a good line. The starters were – all of them were – minus 26 was the best and plus minus in Turner, and the worst was minus 35 in Aaron Holiday. So that's when your starters don't bring it, nobody else brings it, and that's why you lose by 46 points on the road on a Sunday night.
Yeah. It just all happened so fast. Like right away, the Raptors went up 13-1. They hit a bunch of threes, and the Pacers got just a Brogdon free throw. And they just never went back to – like, during that 13-1 run, obviously they got smoked, so this is a loser's thing to say. But, like, it honestly felt like they did okay. They were driving and creating good threes. Aaron had two good three-point attempts. They had a few good shots at the basket. They just missed, as a theme of what I just said. And then as soon as they were down 13-1, there was a timeout, and then they just stopped doing any of that, and they got terrible shot after terrible shot. That was the worst I've ever seen their offense look was for the rest of that quarter, and they just got nothing going.
Yeah, outside of a Giannis-less game and playing what the worst team in the league, this team has looked terrible for what, 3 weeks now?
Pretty bad. Yeah, they it was weird because during their 6-game losing streak, they were in like every game and then just horrible at the end. And then in these two games, well, they kind of had a rough start in a few of those games. And then their rough starts are back. They had a rough start against the Knicks. They had a rough start against the Raptors here. And they've cleaned up kind of their end of game play, but they've been digging themselves these holes so much that they can't even catch up. So, yeah, they've had a they actually look better in their 6-game losing streak than they have in some of the moments since then. They've just gotten better results. But, yeah, a lot of stuff is just very off, and it's bad. They're really playing definitely their worst basketball this season, perhaps since Victor Oladipo was a member of the Pacers, which is quite the thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they've had a good win against a good team since January, and I think it's Denver. I mean, I'm thinking of the Bucks because the Bucks didn't have Giannis. So, like, literally they just have been, you know, they made their bread and butter beating up on the bad teams, but for the better part of the past 3 weeks, it's not been that way. It's this is moved past from, like, this is a cold streak to, like, an alarming trend of where this team is heading. As we're, what, 6 weeks away, 8 weeks away probably actually from the NBA playoffs, and they're pretty much locked in at the sixth seed right now, it feels like, too. So it's
yeah, the only way they don't end up with six now after the stretch to me is if this Ben Simmons injury is incredibly serious.
Yeah, but won't Embiid just carry them? I mean, isn't he good? Embiid's
that's really possible.
Good. And am I actually –
I mean, you can convince me of that, but at the same time, a team trotting out Raul Neto and Trey Burke at point guard.
That's fair.
Can only
that's
get fair. You so far.
Yeah, but Embiid is probably so good. Yeah. Might get the
speaking of point guard, Adam.
Yeah.
We have to do this. We've mentioned this kind of offhand. We went a little bit into it, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago. But I think a huge reason for this slump, and this goes back to a theory I mentioned on the show a million times, is your lead ball handler play is the most important thing for success in the NBA. And lo and behold, their lead point guard play for this whole stretch, really, since Vic came back from Brogdon, has been really bad. I have not seen him like this. Well, I mean, obviously, we've only seen him on this team for 1 year, but this is the worst stretch he's played for the Pacers substantially. His three is just lost. He can't finish at the rim. He's not creating as much for other guys. I know his assist numbers are high, but he's just passing all the time. His defense is a step slower. He's just been rough around, like, for basically a month now.
Yeah, so the thing with Brogdon, so if you take out his first 11 games where he had, like, an incredible start where he was, what, 20 points? I'm going to have it up right now. 20 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds on 47-33 shooting splits. You start to see a different player. I mean, I don't want to say he's been, you know, in stretches he's been better, right? I mean, I feel like he hasn't been as bad as the stat line, but since that first 11 games, it's now 15 points, 7 assists, 4 rebounds on 42-31 shooting. So, I mean, I think part of us has been a little bit in denial about how bad his shooting splits have been. We always thought they would kind of come back up the way they were before. Like, you know, career-wise, he's more like a 47-48% shooter and more like a 40% three-point shooter. But, I mean, I think all we've seen is just continue just to basically become a below-average three-point shooter. And then that leads to him not being able to find other ways to score points and drag him down entirely, basically.
So, since the concussion, he's 22.7% from three, 42% from the field, and sound the alarms, 76% from the free throw line. Malcolm Brogdon, we're talking about here, guys, which that's not a huge deal. I think he's missed two total free throws in that stretch. So it's just a low volume. But yeah, that is atrocious shooting splits. And I know, look, we talked about this, and you're right. Those lofty percentages he has playing third banana on Milwaukee are not achievable in general, just going up one banana to second banana. But even when he is forcing these lead ball handler shots, yeah, his percentages are going to go down. But this is something else. This is really bad. This is beyond your role has changed. This is either you are in a slump or something is wrong. And I was kind of team slump for a little bit, but now watching his defense and his just kind of lethargic steps on like keeping the ball in front of him in general, I'm starting to think something might be wrong, like injury-wise. I don't know what it could possibly be, but he's been injury-prone his whole career, and I'm not saying I know he has an injury or anything like that, but I think it's the most plausible option given what we've seen from him recently.
Well, that was the biggest concern with signing him, right? That's probably, I mean, that's,
yeah, absolutely.
That's why the Bucks would say they didn't re-sign him for that much money, because they thought
yeah.
he was going to be hurt, injury-prone. And, I mean, like I said, I think outside of that first 10 games of the season where he was just awesome, I think there's a really good case that he's been this player the entire season, and it might just
be. Oh, no way he's been this bad the whole season.
But, like, offensively, I mean, you're talking about the first – I mean, I guess the first 11 games also coincide with his first back injury, which is at the 12th game, so maybe that's what goes hand-in-hand together. That's when the back started.
All right, so from game 13 to 26 after his first injury, he was 44-36-90 from game 13 to 26. Then he had – his second injury, which was the ankle back or the hamstring back thing, right?
Yeah.
And then he came back against Philly and got hurt again. And then that stretch before he got the concussion was 40-39-88. So this even is way worse shooting-wise and efficiency-wise than any stretch he's had before.
Yeah, but
his defense has been way undeniably worse.
Yeah, I guess I just don't think he was as good as we thought when the year started. I think he's probably somewhere –
no, that's possible.
Not this bad as he's been, and somewhere in the middle. But I think then when he gets – he's probably more like, what, a 15, 44, 35 shooter probably he should be. That's probably what his stat line is. That's kind of what his middle stretch was this year.
Yeah. Since his 27th birthday, because love good cutoffs here, 39-27-82.
Yeah, I mean the most recent –
there's damn birthdays, man.
What I'm trying to say is I wonder if you got this hot start out of him and he couldn't sustain it, whether it's because of a lingering injury that's going to be there his entire career or whatnot, or if maybe he just wasn't as good of a player as, you know, I think those first 10 games showed him to be, and he's certainly a good player, but like wasn't number two option good. It was more like he's right. There's a reason he was the third guy on a really good team, you know, not the number one or number two option.
Yeah. No, I think he can be a number two guy. Okay. It just hasn't been working because you can't shoot as bad as he's been and be a number two guy. And maybe he won't ever shoot that well again. I don't know what happened, but
it's got to be shots he's taking too, right? I mean, watch the threes he takes. They're all sort of
yeah, none of them are catch and shoot still, which is what we expected as him being number two option. That just hasn't happened.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. It's because of the nature of this team he's played with now. He's not really catch and shoot now. You could say, well, he should take more of those and that will work. But I think in the role he's in now, he's not going to take a lot of catch and shoot threes at the same time. And that's what's going to hurt him, I think, is why we're starting to see a different player compared to his previous years where he was just a guy in the corner who caught the ball and drained threes at a really nice rate. He has to be more of the initiator on offense, has to be more of the, you know, I feel like he's taking a lot of, like, screen and roll threes, right, where, like, he gets a pick and then kisses a bone, but kicks it back out to him in the side and things like that. And you just – that's what you're start. I mean, he has to be in a different role, and he was really good at that for 10 games, but I think we're starting to see what he really looked like in that role. As like,
it's still, I don't get this 10 game number. It was definitely more than 10 games.
It was
closer to 30 games.
I mean, okay, so let's take his first 30. I mean, so isolate his what did he do? Game 13 to 26?
Yeah, those were good too.
I mean, they were still 44-35, I guess 17.
Yeah, from your first option, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, but like, if you look at, but like the first 10 stretch was like another level, right? The first 10 stretch was like, that's what I mean. I think the first 10, 11 games, he looked like he was like an all-star. And I think the, you know, 16 to whatever that 13 is more like a second option player. And then what he's been like more now is like not even a good basketball player.
This is, yeah, nightmare levels.
Of yeah. I guess maybe my point is that like what we saw the first 12 games was like this guy exceeding expectations beyond belief. Then the next stretch we saw him what we thought he would be. And now we're seeing what,
yeah, I can live with this
nightmare scenario of what he could be, I guess.
Yes, I can live with that. But they just need better play from him in general. Like they need him to get guys into the right spots, to initiate more if he is playing with the ball out of point guard, if not to, you know, be hitting shots at a higher level, because they can't handle this. We're seeing right now with Vic obviously working through his year off, and he's I think he's figured out how to throttle a little better, how many times he needs to shoot we've seen in the last couple of games. But with him working through his kinks, Brogdon has to be better. They have to have better lead ball handling play. You know, Sabonis, I feel like, has been a little more turnover prone too. They just aren't getting enough, especially at the start of games from him. And it's really killing them. And that has to, I think that is where this turnaround starts to me, is with Brogdon's play.
Can we maybe talk about coaching for a second?
We can talk about coaching for a second and preparedness for basketball games.
Yeah, well, so you can view this team in a it's the kind of the nihilistic way, right? But like basically what you're seeing out of TJ Warren is like he is basically sucking up the shots that were taken by Thad and Bogdan, hitting him at a better rate, maybe. I mean, maybe not the Bogdan last year, but
what?
So the style that this team should be playing is different from the way they are playing, right? They're playing in a style that really fits TJ Warren's basketball when it should be the other way. It should fit more Vic and Brogdon, and that's creating this kind of problem across the board, I think, with this team, I guess. And I think it goes back to coaching.
Warren can score from anywhere. I'm not sure what you're saying here.
So what I'm saying is I'm going back to the old McMillan's, you know, take the open shot kind of thing, which is leading to Warren taking a lot of these 15 footers, but also leading to like these inefficient play from everybody else. I guess what I'm trying to say. It feels like the coaching with this team is not optimizing their players the best way. I guess, right? That's what I feel like.
Guys should take less mid-range shots. Yes, I don't know if that's a style thing.
No, but I don't think they're optimizing all their talent offensively. That's what it feels like, right?
Okay, well, that's a different thing to me.
No, but I guess maybe that's where I should have started. But I think that goes back to, if you look at the way this team is playing, is they're playing a style that where they should be like guard dominant, especially now with Vic back and Brian, where they should be figuring out and like kind of instead they're, it feels like they're still kind of running things in this kind of old school way. And almost, I guess it feels like
they're slamming through Sabonis, which was working for forever. And Caitlin Cooper actually tweeted this today, which I never had thought of this, but like since they signed so many guys in the summer, like now teams have seen enough Pacers to like game plan appropriately for the heavy Sabonis stuff. Like she didn't say the heavy.
That's why you see his assists go up, right? Because he's finally kicking out of it too.
Right. He has to pass out more and stuff like that. So I think that is a factor here too, as teams have figured out a little more how to defend the heavy Sabonis stuff. I don't think that's necessarily a problem. He's been really good in that role. It is throwback, that's for sure. I think, yes, I do think the shot distribution should obviously be changed.
No, but it,
look at Bojan in Utah right now. Like if you let him chuck more, look what happens.
No, but I think if you look at Nate McMillan over the past three seasons, what tends to happen is the forwards tend to suck the shots out. Now, you go back 2 years to Vic's kind of great year, and that was maybe the one difference where you saw him kind of exceed that. But a lot of times, if you look at like overall, so the forwards, and I'm kind of so much as a forward in this lineup.
No
right
one's
now.
Saying, like, if we look back at Thad, no one would say he sucks the shots out if he makes them. He's just not a good scoring player.
No, but what I'm saying is this team now has really good guards, and they're just not playing through them in a way that makes a lot of sense right now, I guess, is the way I feel.
They shot 28 times against the Knicks. I don't know how much more you want them to have the ball.
What do you mean? Like you mean between Vic and?
Yeah, they have the ball a ton. I feel like they're playing through them a ton.
I guess I feel like with Brogdon especially, and part of his slump has to do with the fact that they're like not putting him in a position where it feels like he can succeed. I guess I feel like
their sets are not creative.
Right. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's where I'm going with it.
They shoot inefficient shots, and they have guys who, and this is something Ben Gibson said in the summer, brought up on the show before. He said, I'd rather have, with McMillan, you'd rather have naturally gifted offensive guys than defensive guys, right? Not that Thad isn't awesome, but like the way McMillan's going to let his guys play, you'd rather have your Warrens and your Lambs. And because they can just get you a bucket when your offense is what it is. And so those guys, you're okay with taking mid-range shots. They're like fine-ish. But yeah, I mean, obviously over the long run, you lose some points by not getting to the rim more or taking more threes. And that is a problem he's had for forever. And I don't think – but I don't like – I'm not looking at their shot distribution right now and going, oh, that's why they're whatever, 3-7, 3-8 since Vic came back.
No, I think – and maybe I didn't do the best job articulating this. I think it's the type of shot distribution, right? I mean, it's like it feels like they're not like it's creativity sets, right? They're not getting like easy looks for the
cards. Right? That was terrible today.
Well, like Warren is part of the way he moves, but like Warren's shots always, maybe he hits them so well that it's all that, but his shots feel easy, right? Like he's got some space, he's moving, he gets on him, whatever, and he's got a little bit of space and he has an 8-foot jump shot, or he's cutting whatever and Broad hits him on a pass, right? Spun's kind of the same way, right? His shots come easier because he's rolling, he's moving, he's not, occasional post up, but most time it's some kind of movement where he ends up going towards the rim. It's like with the guards, and especially you watch Vic and when he comes back, it's just like they either just jack up threes and they don't hit him at enough rate, then they're basically screwed because then the defenders start sagging off them and they can't beat him off the dribble. And like, that's what I mean. There's no creativity like with using anybody else to set up their guards, who are their two best offensive players probably in the long run. Maybe Sabonis is the –
they're trying with Sabonis. They definitely set up a bajillion screens for them. It is definitely not working right now.
Yeah,
right?
To me, it's like this weird thing where, like, I wonder what it looked like if you had a three-guard lineup and you put in T.J. McConnell. Like, I just wonder how that would work for Brogdon and Oladipo. Somebody who you know would just, like – you could run a bunch of off-the-ball action, and he would hit the guys in the perfect pass at the right moment. What did you see all of a sudden?
Well, so far, McConnell, Vic, and McConnell, Brogdon have been pretty bad, but I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but, like, that's what it feels like. And the hard part is you don't really have any great pass with the other three, and Sabonis could be, and that might be where he figured that out. He killed him.
So what gets talked about a lot with the Pacers and creativity is they have a lot of plays, right? People say they don't run plays. They just spam pick and rolls. They have a lot of plays that – every team has. They run a lot of the standard stuff, but they get lost on the Brad Stevens ATO that wins them the game. They don't have that kind of intricate thing.
They ever. Don't stray far from the mean. Let's put it that way.
No, yeah, not at all. Exactly. So that's where I think they get a lot of stuck in the mudness sometimes, especially during these stretches, is when teams can prepare well for them. Nothing's getting thrown at them, but they're like, what is this? You know, what how do we guard this? So yeah. That is where I think Nate's criticisms can come from, and that was an issue in his Portland days.
Well, and I think that's why
Nate's been really bad recently. It's been
why Nate only wins 45 to 50 games a year in his career, because he has a good enough offense to beat the bad teams. Most bad teams are going to beat him because they don't throw out a good enough roster, and you can beat them up running the same things. They're just not good enough to guard the normal stuff, right? But when you reach a point, and I think we probably should do some point, let's look at like the record against teams under five in the playoffs and out of the playoff race, and I'm sure we'll see a huge contrast. But like
with every team, you'd see the same contrast.
Yeah, but I mean you might. Yeah, I mean that's fair because they're all beating up on the bad. But I think you would see something like they maybe only won like 3 or 4 games against teams that are in the playoff race, which is compared to other teams might be kind of low.
This year,
I don't know. I mean, I really
they've beaten a lot of good teams.
Right, they beat Denver twice.
They have some crappy losses this year, which is super atypical of this team.
Yeah, but they beat what Philly once? Or they beat Philly twice this year now.
Maybe twice. Yeah, they've had beat Philly twice.
But both times without Embiid.
Yes, correct.
And then they beat Milwaukee without Giannis. They beat Denver.
Yeah, we can go through the whole list. They beat the Raptors without Siakam. They beat
Boston. That was a good win. Boston was a good win.
Boston, no smart. Like, you can go through that whole list if you want.
Yeah, I mean that's fine. But like, so maybe they have, what, 4? They probably have 7 wins against teams that are in the playoff race, give or take.
Way more than that, right?
I don't know.
You mean the championship race or the playoff race?
Well, I guess are we talking about the top 6? Because like they beat up on Brooklyn a bunch, right? That helps.
Yeah, Brooklyn they beat. OKC they beat twice. They beat the Magic.
Maybe I'm talking about teams that are like in the
beat
top 6.
The Nuggets, beat the Jazz.
But like, I don't consider OKC a good win. I mean, they should beat them, I feel like. That's, I guess, where I'm at. Teams they shouldn't. Maybe it's like a team they should be versus shouldn't
beat. The Thunder have a better record than the Pacers.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't feel like that. They should.
That's interesting.
Also, the Thunder have been rolling since they played them twice in the first. Like, right? They played them every time by the December. Now they've been really good since then. That's also part of it. Denver's been, Oklahoma's been a lot better recently. Anyways, what I was going back to though is what it feels like is they don't is with McMillan is that he can't help them get over a certain hump, and maybe that's something to discuss at some point of like, what is the point of just cycling at 45 to 48 wins and trying to,
you know, that's your goal. That's not a good goal.
No, but like you need a creative jump somewhere. And I wonder if that bleeds through to the players, right? If you don't have a, like if you have a coach that is not very creative, then you're not also, you don't feel like you have the freedom to like
do other players have agency. Like I know they would be creative if they like in situ, I don't know if they're like allowed to is the right word, but yeah, no, exactly.
But if you,
go ahead.
There's something about like, needing the room to fail. Like I think the like Golden State is a good example in the past where like they were a very high turnover team, but they're also because they were running a lot of crazy shit that would lead to sometimes bad plays, right? Like they're like, and I thought with the Pacers is kind of like there isn't
Steph Curry just tried the most ridiculous pass. Well,
exactly, but like that's something that like come from coaching, right? And I don't feel like there's that freedom with the Pacers. I guess
there's some coaching, some player there to me. I mean, I think that with everything.
Yeah, but he didn't – I mean, he had some of that freedom with Mark Jackson, but not the same way he had when he got
– No, I agree. It was
kind of, and Mark Jackson is definitely more like Nate McMillan than he is like Steve Kerr.
Yeah, Mark Jackson is bad.
I mean, but – no, I mean, coaching spectrum, he probably falls more in the Nate McMillan category in terms of just like – he can get you probably 40 wins. He can
get you
there.
Sure.
Anyways. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, but that's all I've
flaws got. Flaws on full display recently with McMillan, right? Like – even the games they're in, there's some fourth quarter rotation stuff makes you go like, what? Typical stuff that we always whine about with him. And when they're losing a bunch, it's easier to talk about it because you have all the ammo in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think.
But again, yeah, if they get smoked in the playoffs, this Nate conversation becomes very serious.
Yeah, I mean, I think a few weeks
ago, like right now, I don't think the seed is warming or anything yet, but it could.
See, I have to say, a few weeks ago, I was kind of like, everybody chill out. Now I'm starting to think it's starting to warm. I mean, you can't lose by 46 points and not get a little bit
nervous. I mean, yeah, that's fair, actually. Okay, yeah, maybe it is. Maybe today is the day. Today is official. There's like a candle, like 5 feet below the chair.
You know, if they lost by 3 points, the Raptors, in another stupid close-up game, I've been like, there'd be some hot seat, but it would have been like whatever because they've been like, okay, well, look at the last three games. They've been playing pretty well, right? They smoked the Bucks where they left, came back, beat the Knicks, you know, should have been by more, but they came back, whatever. And then they, you know, they gave the Raptors a tough team, a good run. But this game is like, oh, God, we're back to where we felt like we were 2 weeks ago, right? They beat basically two teams they should beat.
Oh, no, this does not feel anything like the 2 weeks to me. Those games they were in until the end. This game, they sucked wire to wire. This was
a bad team they lost to in that stretch. That's also why I felt that way.
Bro. Yeah, that's totally fair. This was easily worse than any of those games to me.
Yeah.
By a mile. This would have 81 points.
At least the Raptors are a good team. Losing a game, I feel like when you lose to the Knicks, they did the start of this whole
thing. You only gave up 92. Like they had stuff in that game that you can go, oh yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, but the Knicks are so bad that like it's like losing by 5 points, it's like losing like 30 to the Raptors to me. It feels like so terrible.
No way. I thought that loss was terrible at the time. This one's way worse to me.
I they're both bad losses, Tony. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, we can disagree on this, but I'm not sure it's worse.
Sure, I'm not saying they're not both terrible losses. I think it's ridiculous to say a 7-point loss is even close to the same stratosphere as a 46-point loss.
Well, the Knicks are a terrible team. But
they are a terrible team. And yet, the Pacers barely beat them a few times.
Yes.
The Knicks lost the Raptors by 6 last month.
No, I mean, that's fair. That's fair. That's a fair point. I don't really know what we're disagreeing about. But we've been doing this for about 20 minutes. I think we should take a quick break, and then let's talk about the first quarter struggles. But first, we have a sponsor is Locked On Pacers podcast. So, Tony, our main sponsor is Indeed. How much do you know about them?
My resume is on Indeed when I was looking for my own jobs in college. And Indeed is, of course, fantastic for both people hiring and people looking for jobs. When you're a company starting a hiring process, you probably have a lot of questions, right? Will you find good applicants to choose from? What education experience do they have? What are you looking for? How you know you've made the right hire? Indeed is here to help, aren't they, Adam?
Yes, they have millions of great candidates. You can use Indeed every day to find the next opportunity, or you can post your job there in minutes. Use like screener questions to help you create a short list of applicants really fast. They also add skills tests to the job post so you can be confident in your applicant's ability. It's kind of a great place whether you're applying for jobs or you're looking to hire somebody. They have a library of more than 50 skill tests ranges from industry-specific skills to like accounting, general aptitude, all this kind of stuff. So I think Indeed is a great place if you're looking for a job or you're trying to hire.
Exactly. And if you are trying to hire, if you go to Indeed.com/LockedOn, you will get a free sponsored job upgrade for your first posting. So that will boost you and help you Do better with the applicants. That's indeed.com/lockedon in all caps. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020.
All right. Welcome back into Locked On Pacers podcast. So, Tony, you're going to drive this segment because you want to talk about the first quarters.
Okay. All right. We're doing one of those, the fire drills where everybody switches car seats at a stoplight.
Well, no, I'm happy to ask some questions, but you wanted to talk about this. I pulled up the stats. You told me I listened to you in first quarter stuff.
Well, okay. So the Knicks first quarter, terrible, right? I think they were losing, or they were mostly losing the whole way in that quarter. Yep. Big second quarter, big enough third quarter to hold on for another mediocre fourth quarter. They got off to a slow start against the Nets. They got off to a slow start against the Pelicans. You could go back through many. They scored 11 points in the first quarter against the Knicks the first time they played them, which amazingly they eclipsed in this Raptors game somehow with 12.
Yeah, they scored 12. Pretty good.
Yeah. So some just abysmal fourth quarters dating back for all of February. So I wanted to look. And in the month of February, this is not including the Raptors game, by the way. So this number is probably substantially worse. They are 26th in first quarter net rating at -14.1.
Wow. There are four worse teams than them. Wow.
There are about so you can count as that as about a 4-point deficit every first quarter. That is atrocious. Their offense, especially 94.4 offensive rating, is really bad. Their defense, surprisingly okay. They have to get off to better starts, and some of that is unpreparedness from everybody, players, coaches, whatever. Some of that is just the starters. It's so bizarre. Like the starting five in the third quarter looks fine. End of games, you know, not great. Looks okay. Beginning of games, horrible. It makes no sense to me because as soon as they make some subs or make some changes, things start to get a little better. It's been very, very bizarre to watch them struggle at the start of these games. And Adam, I feel like we've talked about this in past seasons.
Yeah, I'm trying to pull up the 2018-19 first quarter real fast. But I'm thinking of that too. So let's see.
Their defense in first quarters is in the top half of the league. Their offense is 28th. So they just cannot, for the life of them, get good shots and score them.
So I'm trying to pull up the advance real fast, but their first quarters, they were a minus last year also, just so you're aware. Just so in 20,
yes,
in last season, they were minus, I think it was minus 2 points per quarter, but their net rating in first quarters last year was a -3. Go by month, it just got worse. Oh, last year, ironically, wow, they were a -22 net rating in the first quarter of the month of February last season as well.
Wow. What happened in February last year? I thought they were okay that month.
That was right when Vic got hurt the first time, so they were.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes more sense.
So this seems to be a trend, let's say, at least, that they are not good at first quarters overall. Not the February thing. I think that's – throw that out. But the trend of them not being a first quarter team just keeps going back because it won their – this year, especially because their bench unit has been really solid, so it kind of makes the starters look bad in comparison. But two, it just feels like they don't – right in the past, it was like they always went to like the Bojan play first, then a Turner play, and right the first four.
Well, now they go to a Sabonis play and then a Turner play.
Exactly.
They haven't talked about it, but they do the same things where they run similar plays to start games. They are just different plays in life.
But they run the same plays every game. So if any team at half thinks about
They did change it up after the All-Star break. The last two games, it's been different.
Okay, but it didn't work tonight. It didn't matter. They scored 1 point.
No, it did not. It did not work tonight. That is an accurate statement.
No, but like they're also in the first quarter, and you can like almost see when they have it or not because they'll mess up like a couple like offensive rebounds in the first couple minutes, and that will just screw up the rest of the game pretty much.
Yeah,
at times. You know, the thing too is the team.
Quarter net rating is first.
Yeah, well, the goal
first
of this team
right in the
is
league just, in this month. What the heck?
Like to be down 5 at the end of the first, and then have the bench carry them second quarter and bring them back. Like this whole team is out of whack. It feels like in a way sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a bizarre. Like that's not cohesion. That's just like what the hell. Third quarter about average, 18th. Fourth quarter probably about. I'm guessing about average, but I want to see anyway. I know it feels like fourth quarters are probably pretty bad. Oh, hey, I'm way off. Fourth quarter, 29th. Okay, what do I know?
They are pretty bad, I guess. They do feel, and they are by the
stuff. Yeah, their offense is much better. Like, okay, 110, cool. But their defense has been really bad in the fourth quarters.
And like, I mean, go back and talk about Brogdon. He's probably been part of the problem in the first quarter.
That's why it feels like fourth quarters were okay in my head.
Whatever they're doing with Turner, I mean, like, it just doesn't – like, I don't know whether he needs the ball more, and that's all. But, like, whatever they do doesn't seem to work with him ever. Like,
yeah, negative net rating for the Sabonis-Turner duo since January 1st.
He looks unengaged and just
Looks unengaged. It's just he's getting the ball less.
Yeah, but I think he looks frustrated at times. Like you would see it. Like I think he puts on a good face, but I think he looks like he's sort of like, "What am I doing here?" They're playing me at like a non.
I have yet to gather that.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at some of the shots I've seen him on the bench. I mean, it feels like I don't really know. I don't really get his use. I guess they don't play him in fourth quarters a lot of times now. If you notice that, or they bring him in like really weirdly isolated, and he's not getting a ton of shots. Like they're not, you know, letting him drain threes, and he's not shooting from three when he does take them. Doesn't really matter. I mean, it's just
over half his shots are threes.
No, but I mean, like he was taking up to like four and a half threes a game. Now he's down to like 3.9. I mean, he's not taking as many overall.
Yeah, he's taken four games since Vic came back. The alarming number is only 7.5 shots. That's
what I mean. I mean, he's just overall shot numbers are just
– that's very low, yeah. His minutes are still about the same. He's playing about 30, but it does it has felt a little different. But I think it's about the same general role.
Yeah, but isn't he playing – he's playing most of the first quarter now because the way Sabonis plays the whole second.
Yeah, and then they have Sabonis
to the third. So he ended up playing like – yeah, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong. I just feel like he hasn't played the end of fourth quarter in a lot of games, or he has been like very isolated versus like, you know, the last 6 minutes in the game. It feels like they've been going a lot smaller with Holiday at times, or
yeah, and they've been blowing fourth quarter leads at him. Maybe we should be talking the other way.
I'm not saying they shouldn't play Turner. I just feel like Turner's role this year. I mean, you can see his blocks are way down. In terms of like where he was last season and where he's been, he's more back. You know, it just feels like this.
Right, that's like he's not guarding centers as much.
No, it just feels like his role is like they're not playing into his strengths defensively as much, which is hurting, you know, his maybe self-esteem, and then he's not getting the ball on offense. So it's just like, I don't know, I feel like we're heading to a point where Turner's going to say he wants to be traded because he's not being played right.
Whoa, wow. We are jumping the gun here, Adam. Whoa.
I mean, do you not feel like in the summer we're heading towards that moment?
I highly doubt he demands a trade. Yes, that is.
No, but we're heading to a moment where it's like maybe they should trade him because they're not playing him right. I mean, I'm saying
that's possible. That's totally different than what you just said.
I mean, I don't think he's the kind of player to demand a trade because of just his personality. But like, there's definitely that. Like, we're heading to this point where this like, oh yeah, we don't need Turner anymore, and we're gonna try to get rid of him. And I don't.
Yeah, that's what this is. The experiment is failing, which it has been since January 1st. Yeah, we have to have that discussion.
Well, right, because like before they did this experiment where it was like
it was good the first half. It was good through December.
No, but like last year they didn't try rough, right? They played
five minutes a game, not enough.
And they just closed with Turner every time. This is what they did pretty much. I mean, I guess maybe a little more split, but I felt like they closed Turner a lot. That was just what they did.
Quite a bit.
Right? This year it's the exact opposite, pretty much.
What? He's out there like three quarters of the time, I'd say, at the end of the game.
Okay. I guess maybe reason. I mean, not the exact opposite, but it's more towards Sabonis. But Sabonis having a career year, like, of course.
Career year, absolutely.
That's part of it. I mean, I guess – I don't know. It feels like, and we kind of strayed off the first quarter, but it feels like Turner is a piece of this whole struggles because he's just like,
oh wow,
he's not being played right, I guess, at times. I don't
know. I think he's playing pretty okay, actually.
I think when he plays in a right role, he's really good. I just think they're not playing him in like a good role, I guess.
I mean, I don't know who takes his shots instead, but other than low volume, I don't know what more you can. Like, I don't know how you – let me rephrase. I think he's doing fine in what he's asked to do. He's just not asked to do as much.
Yeah.
I think his impact's been about the same.
I feel like we're going to go back to our offensive creativity discussion, the fact that they just don't know how to use offensively. I don't really want to do that, so – but that's
– Well, we talked about for forever, like, the idea of him and Sabonis on offense is he's the floor spacer. He's the floor spacer. Great. Now he's the floor spacer, and everyone's like, well, wait, not like that. It's like, what? So, truly, his offensive impact is actually better than last year for most impact metrics.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he stretches the floor really well. I guess my biggest fear is that he is a much better offensive player than we think because he doesn't have a creative coach who knows how to use him. That's my
possible.
That's my biggest fear about what's happening with this whole thing is in that they're moving in this direction of like, well, see, we don't need him that badly. We can flip him.
Seems like a very in-the-moment take to me.
Yeah, it might be. It might be. But I feel like it's been about a month where I've like – he's been so much less noticeable as a player on the court for the better part of maybe.
That'll happen when you're taking 7.5 shots a game.
No, exactly. But like defensively, I don't feel like he's having this like.
The defense has been worse than last year this year. No doubt. I will 100% be on board with that thought.
Because like last year, I thought offensively, he didn't really make a leap. But defensively, he was.
Huge leap.
He won like four games on his defense alone last year.
Huge leap on defense last year.
And it feels like this year, because of whatever they're doing, maybe it just won't be successful because of they need to rely on Sabonis. That's a whole other thing. But it just, I don't know. It feels like he's just
being. He went from like a top five defender to like a top 15 defender or something.
Yeah. And it feels like if he is in the right role, he could probably be a top five defender again. And if he has a better offensive coach, he would be.
He is away from the rim more on D. That is a little annoying. That's a product of the – and that's a negative part of the experiment with Sabonis. And we knew that before the season even started. That would be the case.
Yeah. I guess do you
– I have no issue with his offensive use. None.
Yeah, I don't really. I mean,
if you can find a way to get him a few more shots, that'd be great. I don't know who you take them from. Actually, I do Brogdon right now, but that's easier than I thought. Yeah, maybe
that was really quick. You did.
Yeah, I just realized. Oh yeah, this guy is shooting 20-whatever% from three. Other than that, I think they just his defensive role is what's altered his impact. But I have no issue with his offensive use.
And I get that he's like. Has he been in a pick and pop yet this year? I mean, I haven't seen one in like
fewer. That was something I noticed in my Brogdon stuff this summer is he never did pick and pops. Even when he was the guy going around screens to the box, never did pick and pops. And that's what Collison was really good at, was feeding Turner in those pick and pops.
Oh, yeah.
Man, where are we at? We just talked about Darren Collison on this show. He was a master at feeding.
We should imagine he decided to stay retired.
Good for him, man.
Yeah.
Good for him. Enjoy your time off. But that was something he was really good at that Brogdon has not been as good at all is finding Turner, especially in pop situations, because he's still setting screens every game, like every third or every third possession. It's just he's been less easy to find. And it seems like a few times recently, too, I've noticed he's faking and trying to put it on the floor, which is interesting.
Well, I will say this, and maybe I'm being too optimistic, but like, is there not some way to use Turner's most together when one has the ball in their hand? Probably Sabonis.
I am very anti that.
Okay. This is because there's too many tall guys in one spot and the ball.
I just don't think either of them are good enough ball handlers for that to work.
I feel like Sabonis is getting there a little bit.
He has had some nice moments in transition. Yes.
Yeah. I guess it just feels like if they don't have that way, like to me, if you put Turner next to Jokic, I feel like he could be really, really successful.
You know who's good at finding Turner?
Ooh.
Aaron Holiday.
Yeah. No, but do you not agree
that was random.
If you put Turner next to Jokic, he could be really successful all of a sudden.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so? I think he would be pretty damn set. I don't know. Maybe no.
I think Turner's best front court partner is like Draymond or someone like that.
Jokic is kind of Draymond light-ish. Not defensively, but offensively.
Jokic plays nothing like Draymond.
No, but I – sorry, I mean in the terms of size and ability to handle the ball in that time type of way, I guess.
Yeah, Draymond's like the fastest decision-making passer ever.
That's yeah,
he'd be great at it.
Jokic just is like a triple threat, I guess, maybe is the problem.
Every guy, I'm like, okay, playmaking fours, that would be good with Turner. And I'm like, LeBron, yeah, well, like, duh, everybody's a good fit with LeBron. Like that is not what I'm trying to say, but that is what keeps happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler, when he's at power forward, would be a good fit with Miles.
Paul Jordan, he's at power
forward. I'm trying to get away from the star.
Butler's a star. I don't know what you're talking about. Butler is one of the best 15 players in the league.
Who?
But Jimmy Butler is a top 15.
Absolutely. Player. I'm trying to get away from stars.
Oh.
I'm trying to get away from the Butler guy. Sorry, I did phrase that not good at all.
Like, would he play well with like a Bradley Beal or John Wall? I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd be good on the Wizards. He'd be good on the Pacers, too. He is good.
Well, not in this current iteration.
I think he's playing good.
I just mean his potential.
Could they be better with someone else? Maybe. Especially come playoff time, we'll see.
But he would be a better player somewhere else. Like, he wouldn't be this 11-point. He probably.
Maybe. I've never seen him play in another system. I mean, obviously, him shooting more threes, having a high three-point attempt rate would be better. But
yeah.
I don't know how other teams would use him. The Wizards don't, like, give their centers the ball, so.
Yeah, no, I mean – well, he also is a center in a league. He doesn't like centers anymore, so there's that.
Yeah, well,
it's the Rockets who are playing like PJ freaking Tucker at center.
Yeah, they get they're so psyched to get Damari Carroll and Jeff Green because they're big.
Yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about before we do the week preview?
Not really, Adam. They played pretty good against the Knicks, and we didn't even talk about that game. That's how bad the Raptors game was. So,
well, I don't consider the Knicks a legit franchise, so I don't win or lose against them.
Adam, you didn't listen. I was 1 point off of getting the Knicks score exactly right on my
prediction. Nice.
That's the best prediction I've ever had in my
life. Wait, way to call me out for not listening to your show. I don't appreciate that.
I don't listen to yours.
I know. I'm kidding. I hear you enough, Tony. It's okay. I
used to listen to ours all the time to see if we could get better, and I probably should. I just
don't.
I just can't anymore.
No, I just, I don't have hours in the day. And if I want your opinion, I know how I can just text you for it.
Yeah, that's true. We have the access to that information.
I don't like
need. No, I think we should, look at the week ahead, and it'll be easy because they've played a lot of these teams already.
All right, let's take one more break and then we'll preview the week. All right, so we got three games coming up against three teams the Pacers have already played. So this is easier.
Easy peasy. I love it.
So we've got the Charlotte Hornets to start. They play Charlotte on Tuesday night. Charlotte is, you have Charlotte stats up?
I always have the numbers, Adam.
Yeah, I haven't pulled them up yet. So
28th in offense, 25th in defense. They have won four basketball games since January 6th. The Hornets are not playing very good. And if it weren't for possibly the best quarter of their season in Charlotte against the Pacers would have beaten them by double digits two times. So we have a lot to go off of evidence-wise that the Pacers are much better than the Hornets.
Yeah.
Although the Pacers have not been playing bad the last two times they played the Hornets.
So, yeah, I mean, if we kind of want to burn through them a little bit, I assume if butcher-wise, it's Devontae Graham for you.
I don't want to burn through them.
No, but if we move a little faster, Devontae Graham is your butcher as he is mine, probably.
He's a great choice. He's shooting above league average from three on ridiculous attempts, which we talked about last time, but he played pretty bad against the Pacers in Charlotte until that fourth quarter. And then in Indy, I don't think he played particularly well either. Yeah, he was 7 for 15. So they've done a pretty good job of making him work for his points. But yeah, he's been their best player this season, which is such a revelation, even though he's not shooting particularly well from the field. But they have other guys who have done well against the Pacers. Miles Bridges and his athleticism have been able to get in the lane and do some damage this year. And Terry Rozier has actually done pretty well because Brogdon is not good at defending these quick point guards like Terry.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I will say about this Hornets team is that they do have between Bridges and Rozier, and they're going to have a good draft pick, they have like a decent outlook going forward.
They do have a decent outlook. And if Malik Monk ever remembers how good he was in college, maybe they could have
a
very good outlook.
They need to get like a top three pick and hit on one of that guy, and then they have a real – because, I think Graham and Miles probably could be two or threes on a team, but I'm not sure they're number ones, right? So that's
And PJ Washington also is in that group, probably.
Yeah, that's fair. But they have some good talent, and Rozier, while it's a shitty contract, he'll be gone in 2 years. By the time, Devontae Graham won't be a free agent for another 3 seasons, so by the time that happens, he'll be off the books. And the outlook is looking better for this team that, I'd say 2 years ago when we started this podcast doing this, they were probably the worst salary.
They were locked into the Kemba and Co. guys.
Well, they locked into Kemba and like, you call it Co., but it was like, who was making what was
Batum was awesome near that 148 game.
Yeah, but then the game
he just stopped being awesome.
Yeah, he makes like what 25 a year or something
crazy. Yeah, the Hornets don't talk about that. What's killed the Pacers against the Hornets is Zeller. Amazingly, I can't believe I'm saying this. Cody Zeller and Bismack Biyombo have been on possibly the bigger killers of the Pacers than anyone else. Zeller hit a three in Indy, which was funny. But he's been killing them on the offensive glass, same with Biyombo, and they've done a really good job inside. And they don't set a ton of screens, but they just really have been killing it on the inside, in the inside glass. And we've known the Pacers having rebounding struggles for basically every month since November, which is ridiculous. We should just be not using a caveat and say the whole season at that point. But, they have to do better keeping – they did better with Biyombo last time. He only had only two offensive rebounds, but they had to make sure to contain those guys.
Yeah.
Biyombo was awesome the first time they played.
This is the kind of game where if they have to focus on they have to make rebounds, I guess, on the offensive end. They have to really focus in on that and not get just boy on the glass because that can kill them. I killed them when they lost the first time in the years. They didn't have any centers, so their defense didn't. They started, I think, Jakarta Simpson at center in that game. So that's what I lost that one.
Blowing a big lead, obviously frustrating. Blowing a big lead because Bismack Biyombo gets 5 offensive rebounds and scores 15 points is pretty annoying.
and I think that's why my X factor probably for this game is Sabonis and just making sure you clean up the glass. Is that fair? Or do you think Sabonis, you have another X factor besides Sabonis?
No, Sabonis is a good choice. And, him being efficient, getting on track and letting them finish around the rim would be huge, as he's done many times this year. But I think that, Terry and Devontae Graham are pretty small. So you could say their size at guard will help them, especially if Oladipo was back, which, my gosh, they're playing so bad. We didn't even talk about Oladipo being hurt with his back injury or Lamb's knee injury in the first two segments. So quick hitters there.
We probably should have done that earlier.
Victor Oladipo is day-to-day with a back injury. Who knows how long he'll be out for. He did not practice in Toronto or play in that game. Jeremy Lamb's knee got banged up in the Toronto game. We will, again, see how long he is out for with a sore left knee. I'm not too concerned about the Vic injury. Seems like they're already, doubtful questionable range, which is usually a good indicator that he won't be out for more than, two, three games, if that. So the Lamb one is the one that worries me, but we'll see.
Lamb's been hurt nonstop this year, it feels like. And
I know. What the heck? He was pretty healthy guy, former Hornet.
As long as it's not Vic's knee, I'm, not concerned, I guess.
Yeah, I know.
Right? As long as it's not, a leg-related injury, I'm kind of okay, he'll be okay.
Well, it could be an overcompensation thing even in the back, though.
I mean, yeah, or it could just be that he stepped wrong. Because when you're running up.
So we'll see how long he's out for. Who knows? Thankfully, they have a not brutal week coming up. But, yeah, big guards need to step up. And if they're forced to go Aaron Holiday, he's going to have to play big and be able to contain those guys. But, actually, mine's going to be Aaron Holiday because he'll for sure play, I'm guessing, if Vic or Lamb is out. And I'm guessing one of them will be out. So Aaron Holiday going to probably start. He'll have to do well containing those guys. And, of course, not go crazy shooting a million shots on offense.
Yeah, if Vic does play, it'll be interesting to see this team. Because, I think we've talked about if – Aaron Holiday was playing pretty well. Nice. He's been not so great as of late, so I get why he kind of got pushed out of the rotation. But I'm interested to see if he can kind of get his mojo back in a way, because I think if he had a nice little march here, let's say Lamb is out 2 or 3 weeks, right? So he ends up playing, and he has a nice little run. He might be able to push himself into the rotation again for the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's going to be big for him, because that's how he improves to a level where he can become a starter someday, where I think – I mean, if he doesn't, it's not a big deal. I think they'll try to get him minutes next year, but it's a chance for him to try to kind of push his way there, I guess.
Right. Right. I want to say they win. You know, I thought they would beat the Knicks. I would not have predicted a win against the Raptors, although I would not have thought they would get destroyed that badly. I still feel like they're going to beat the Hornets, man. The Hornets really stink. Even when the Pacers are at their worst, I think they can beat Charlotte.
I think they lose. I'm just going to be a downer until they win.
That's all right. After they lose by 48, you can get away with saying they lose to a high school team. So.
I don't think they would lose to any college or high school team. I think they're professionals.
I know, I'm joking about that.
But I think they might lose to a lot of bad teams. I could see this.
It's certainly possible. They've lost the Hornets already. Thankfully, they're at home, yeah, which would help. And they need these two home games. They got a 5-game road trip coming up after them.
Yes. So the next home game is they take on Portland on Thursday. Pacers got beat. What was the score last game? 139-129 in Portland. It was the end of a 5-game road trip. That was also the important day of – Kobe's passing. So
basically, this game comes down to, is Lillard going to play? The last update on him was from the 20th of February. It says Lillard is expected to miss the next 3 or 4 games for them, and this is, lo and behold, the 4th game. So the Pacers' chances in this game rely on if he's playing or not playing, because he was the best player in the NBA he did that thing we talk about on the show sometimes.
February, man, he does it.
Every February, he's the best player in the league for a few weeks, and there it was, and he clawed them. I think they're only a game or two out of the 8th seed behind the freaking Grizzlies somehow, although the Grizzlies in a little bit of free fall right now. Wow, they're still 3.5 back. They got some work to do. But he kept them within striking distance. He got them past the Spurs. So
yeah, he had 50 last time they played. So
yeah, he was ridiculous. We don't even have to do butcher discussions with this team, because it's him if he plays. We'll talk about other guys in a moment, but yeah, he did it. He had the stretch and made them really good. And no one really was, when they lost in January, it was the end of the road trip. Dame was ridiculous. The Pacers scored 129. Their offense was pretty good that game. Lamb was really good, right? They have tiny guards on this Portland team, and that let him do a lot of good stuff. And they got good Doug McDermott shooting. But they played really well. They just couldn't stop Dame, so they lost. Without Dame, I think the Blazers aren't very good, and they've got a shot.
Yeah, so without Dame, they threw out a lineup of McCollum, Gary Trent, Ariza, Carmelo Anthony. Wow. I almost said
Carmelo Anthony Towns. Nice.
And Hassan Whiteside.
I love it.
So, if that's a lineup, it's McCollum is the butcher by far.
Yeah, absolutely. What did he score in their last game? I'll look it up.
Guess I could. Could they start Anthony Simons eventually?
Close. They like him a lot, but I don't know.
Right, I mean, they want to keep their bench intact, and that's why they started Gary Trent.
CJ McCollum, 27 points. Yeah, 10 assists. Man, they had him doing everything.
Yeah, he probably was kind of the pseudo point guard in those games.
Yeah, Carmelo had a good game with 20.
Yeah, they still lost by 13 to the Pels.
They did. Pels are good right now.
Yeah, Zion's freaking killing it. Too bad he didn't play.
Glad the Pacers don't have to play them anymore, because, man, are they rolling. Anywho, yeah, with no Dame, I mean, you got to kind of hope if you want the Pacers to win these two home games that Dame doesn't play. Obviously, he's a complete joy and ridiculous player to watch, but they have a better chance if he doesn't. So we'll see. And their bench is pretty weak. If you heard some of the starters even from their last game, their bench is pretty weak right now. So Pacers should have some opportunities to do well with their bench units if Dame doesn't play and they're getting a little more on track, although it's hard to have confidence that that will be the case.
Yeah, I think that's my X factor, the bench.
Bench, nice. You're using it here?
Using it here.
Minus TJ Warren. Missed the scoring TJ Warren. Something's up with his left elbow. Man, we did the injuries last time and didn't even talk about him. He was rubbing it in this Raptors game. Hopefully it's nothing serious for him, although I know he had a back injury during the All-Star break. He was questionable for that Knicks game. Anywho, Carmelo Anthony, good resurgent year for him. Very happy for him. 15 points a game. Never would have seen that coming in a million years from him. Still one of the worst defenders ever. Trevor Ariza is the most overrated defender in basketball. I regret every nice thing I said about Trevor Ariza on this podcast.
Well, he was good for a few years.
He was with the Rockets. He's an okay three-point shooter, and he is a – well, he's been an okay three-point shooter with Portland, let me say. And he can move around, I guess, okay. But, yeah, I have regrets about what I thought of his one-on-one defense. Warren can score against either of those guys pretty easily, so on him. And if Ariza plays the four, Sabonis can destroy him, so – forward play, but I'll pick TJ Warren.
Okay, so do you think win or loss? I think if Lillard plays, they lose.
Lillard plays, lost, done. That's easy. He's just so good, and they have no answer for him, right? Every flaw in Brogdon's defensive game, even at its best, Lillard can beat. I mean, he can beat anybody. But with Brogdon playing like this, yeah, it's Lillard if he plays. If not, I mean, it's CJ, right?
Yeah.
And can you go with anyone else? Whiteside's been amazing on D this year, to his credit.
No. I know you have that great tweet you love with Whiteside in it, but no.
I was out and I heard Mr. Brightside and I was like, oh, I had a great tweet about Hassan Whiteside one time. That was good.
Yeah, you brought it up like right on Twitter twice. Did you bring it back up? I'm trying to remember what you did.
Yeah, that was my first time bringing it back up in a while.
Okay, is that what it was? I thought I'd seen it because somebody liked it recently or whatever. I guess.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't know. I feel like I've seen it before. Maybe that's what it was.
Maybe. Yeah, no Lillard, they got a shot for sure. I think we'll know more about their chances, honestly, after the Charlotte game. If they do well against Charlotte, I think they can do well against this team, too. If they do bad against Charlotte, they have no chance, even without Lillard.
Hopefully they can flip a switch. I'm concerned. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, we'll see. And so then they're off on a five-game road trip.
And luckily, they start the five-game road trip against who is the coach right now of the Cleveland Cavaliers that they play?
Maybe Bickerstaff.
Bickerstaff, all right. So there's two things going on. One, that this team fired their coach at the All-Star break, so that's maybe a good
sign. They won their first game back, though.
Yeah, and then won second one by, like, 19 points. And they're on a back-to-back, the Cavs are.
They are on a back-to-back. That is noteworthy.
There's a good chance Kevin Love doesn't play. He didn't play on their most recent back-to-back.
A traveling back-to-back. How convenient.
Yeah, but aren't they playing in Cleveland? Or are they playing in, no, they're playing in New Orleans. And
in New Orleans and then home. Gotcha, that's what I meant. Home.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's what I meant by traveling.
I got you. I was thinking they were traveling.
So, pros of playing the Cavs, they're the Cavs. They have a new coach. It's a back-to-back, so no Kevin Love. Cons of playing the Cavs, they have Miles Turner's kryptonite, Andre Drummond. Yes. Although, to be fair, for the Cavs, he has been pretty not good so far.
12-12 in his first game, or first game after the All-Star.
13-12, that's still good numbers. And he's playing very low minutes, surprisingly. I mean, not surprisingly, they're not trying to win, but so maybe that's how they win, is he just doesn't play that much. But the Cavs have young guards who are learning to play in the NBA, and that is why they don't win very much, and that is why the Pacers can beat them.
So here's what I'm going to say. Here's my butcher. It's because I picked him in fantasy.
Sex man.
Yep, Sexton. So since the beginning of the year, he's played 23 games. He is averaging 22.4 points, 3.5 assists. He's shooting 47, 45, 89 split. That is a damn good shooting split. He is looking
Sexton's good.
He is becoming the player in college that we all thought he was. I mean, I thought in college he was really awesome, and I thought when he played in Alabama, and he's finally kind of becoming that.
Colin Sexton and Chetty Osman are averaging about the same assists per game. Love.
Sexton is very much not a
pass. More assists per game than Colin Sexton. So, again, I like Colin Sexton, great scoring guard. That dude is one of the worst point guard passers in the
NBA. Oh, he's really just a two-guard. He's very, very Kyrie.
He is a two-guard. That's why they got Garland, because Garland there having be the passing guy, although he's still. Yes. This is going to be one of those things. You remember a few years ago, the Orlando Magic tweeted, like, some about their best assists man of the year, and it was Shelvin Mack at 3.8 per game.
That's pretty terrible. That's 3.9 graphic.
Here. Well, currently Garland is leading the Cavs at 3.9 assists per game. They do not set up guys to score. A lot of their offense comes from offensive rebounds from their plethora of big men between Tristan Thompson, Drummond, and Kevin Love, and like you said, sixth in order.
They should do that for every team. Like, make every team give their assist man of the year, or like their man of the year, and just like all the teams have like some guy averaging six rebounds a game that wins, and four like two assists, just something really just like.
I want to find it. I bet if I Google Shelvin Mack tweet, it's like literally the first thing that comes. Yeah, it's literally Orlando Magic on Twitter at Shelvin Mack with the dimes, and they made this fancy graphic of his 3.9 assists per game.
You know what? Good for Shelvin Mack, a guy who second round pick,
baller boy,
made a good NBA career for a guy who probably when he went to college probably didn't think he'd make it to the NBA.
There are some good replies to that tweet. Speaking of baller guys, Kamar Baldwin. Oh my gosh, I just said Kamar Baldwin. He's on baller right now. Caleb Martin on the Timberwolves right now had 19 points at halftime in Timberwolves Nuggets. I want to see what he finished the game with while you talk more about the Cavs.
Oh my God! Thanks, Tony, for that one.
21. He only had two in the second half. Boring.
So yeah, they have no one. Hold on. I can do this. Butcher wise for this game. Not butcher wise. We did butcher wise. X factor wise.
Anyone? No,
probably. I assume Vic will play by this game. This could be a good opportunity for him to just go off.
29th rated Cavs defense. You could literally pick anyone, and I'd go, yeah, you know what? They have a good chance doing well this game.
Well, Vic looked kind of solid.
Vic is a good choice, right, because they're rolling out two young, crabby defense, tiny guards at their 1-2.
You know, I didn't say this, but, like, Vic looked, from when he – coming out of the offspring, he looked, like, better. Like, I thought he looked a little better in this game.
Bucks and Knicks games, that's what I did. I went on Locked On NBA with Josh Lloyd. I don't know if anyone's on it. I talked to him about how – In those two games, his shot count being lower, I think, was pretty impressive. You know, he's figuring out how much to throttle, giving the ball to his teammates and scoring himself. But he looks better when he's shooting less. He looks really good, actually.
Well, because he has to ease his way because he doesn't have his touch still, and he has to ease.
Yes, he should not be shooting 17 in the game.
Yeah, he's got to ease his way to figure out how do I get my touch back, because that was the best part about him when he was at his peak, was that he could
pull up three was his best thing at his peak.
Oh, I think it's going to the rim and just getting clocked like nine different ways.
He is a great driver, but man,
still draining the layup almost every time. Oh,
I was looking at pull up three stats from him recently, and they were staggering. But yeah, you're right. He was a fantastic driver. I'm not saying it wasn't.
I mean, he would get to the rim and he would get knocked around by every Wush dude.
Making ridiculous. Just
dropping. Going from Paul George, who couldn't do that till he left the Pacers, to Oladipo, was just like night and day.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to him against this team. That's a good pick. Is Victor Oladipo? Maybe this is a good. If Brogdon's gonna get back on track, the Cavs are the team to do it against. I have no confidence in him doing it, but
maybe the Hornets first. Maybe have two or three good games would be nice. Maybe they don't. Maybe there are some players who just play against three really crappy.
Yeah. Good week for him to figure it out.
I really hope so. That we'll find out. He's injured and he'll miss the next month.
We will. Your predictions for the record this week?
0-3.
0-3, Adam.
I'm not gonna pick him to win.
No way. They go 0-3 this week.
Oh God, I really wish you hadn't said that.
No. Yeah, I know. I know. I did it. No way they go 3-0 this week there. See, I helped. I fixed it. I've just like since I've covered basketball since the 2016-ish season, the teams I've covered, I've never really seen a stretch like this where they just massively implode all at once. So we'll see. Maybe they can figure it out.
I've watched basketball since the 2004 season, and I've seen the Patriots do this a few times.
There you go. And you're the pessimist, so that's not good. I just think we have enough body of work to know that they can climb back to on track. The question is how long is they going to
take? I hope so. I mean, this is usually, the March month is the hardest month for this basketball because it's kind of like the seeding's mainly set. You're basically kind of competing probably for like the top seeds are usually set. And you're kind of competing for like the 2 through 4 numbers or 5 numbers. And it's like the Patriots are not really even in that race. So like it's just kind of like it's a slog because everyone's got the playoffs. So like this is an opportunity where like you could really mail it in because also half the teams are starting to tank that aren't gonna make the playoffs, and then you can just kind of beat them. You just show up and make a couple buckets. So like
right,
it's a good opportunity if you're a good team to kind of rack up some confidence wins and keep it rolling at least a little bit.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll talk about it all this whole week. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at TEastNBA. You can follow Adam at FriedmanM5. Hopefully we'll have nice, positive things to say this week. That is all we have for today's show. Adam, you got anything else?
No, I think I'm good. I thought I was hosting the show, though.
I know. I realized you were. That's why I threw it back to you.
I think I did this last time when you hosted.
I just stared at the screen. I was like, crap, I'm not ending this.
That's okay. I did the same thing last time when I did started reeling off the ads, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not hosting. I guess go check out Tony on the Lockdown NBA show. You can get their podcast on, I'm assuming, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere there's a podcast. You can follow also our Lockdown
NBA. Talk mostly about Vic on there.
You can also follow at Lockdown NBA for all that kind of more general content. As a network, we're really the NBA network definitely on the Lockdown is killing it recently. We've all our hosts are in a chat, so we talk a lot. So been doing great work across the board. If you want to see what's going on in the other team, check those out. I think I was in this podcast, and we'll see you guys again tomorrow.